I call it participatory observation. You hear me a couple of times in the piece, right? Does that bother anybody that you hear me? I ask these guys questions. What's wrong with your feet? How do you feel? You know, what are you in here for? You think the chain gangs are going to stop you from doing this, that, and the other? Does that bother you? It doesn't bother me, but you got to be conscious of this. I mean, participatory observation, your job when you go out here, anytime you walk onto, you know, into an office, into the exercise yard of a prison, onto a football field, up to a demonstration, your presence with a camera changes the dynamic of what's happening, okay? Your job is to change that dynamic as little as possible. But you have to introduce yourself somehow and at some points to get these guys to tell their stories. You've got to participate with them to a certain level, very, very cautious level, to have them tell their stories, because I want them to tell their stories, you know? I don't want to come back and have to write everything, you know, he told me this and he told me that. I want them to tell me their stories. So I've got to ask them, I've got to participate somehow. I have to engage them to some degree. So I'm there to observe, first of all, and to change the dynamic as little as possible, but I want to get them to be part of the production. These cameras are phenomenal in the sense that they not only do not shut people down, and I've watched particularly in places like Central America, where these big guys would come up with these big cameras and they point them at these little campesinos, these little peasants, and the peasants would just kind of like cower almost in front of all this technology, and Brad is shaking his head because you know what I'm talking about, you work with these people. These cameras, not only in places like Central America and Africa, places that I've worked, Afghanistan and Iraq, these cameras give subjects a sense that they have some level of control of the creative process. They actually lure people out. People want to talk with you with these cameras. It's really amazing. They don't shut people down. They don't scare people. And then, Red, go ahead.
Did you use lav mics on anybody but the official prison interviews?
Yes, I put it on Michael as much as I could, and I put it on Robbie, my two main characters. I'll tell you, these lav mics, and we'll get into this later, they're extraordinary tools, and they help you not only to get decent sound from people who are far away, but they help you anticipate, because you can hear people talking when they're around a corner when you can't see them. They're wonderful tools.
I didn't understand the question. What was it? Was it the wireless mics?
Or was he working off the camera
mic? Oh, gotcha.
What I'm wearing here.
And only twice you had mics on people.
I try to mic all of my main characters. And when I haven't figured out who the character is yet, I'll put a mic. You know, if there's a meeting like here with these people I'm shooting, I don't know who I'm following, I'll put the mic in the center of the table, because it's even from a distance, you know. And even though people are a couple of feet away from the mic, I can still pick up usable sound. So these mics are really, really critically important. And Rhett, you had a question.
Bother me at all, because it was honest, kind of like open-ended questions. But what has bothered me with some pieces that I've seen is when I think that they're leading the person, and you feel like you're being spoon-fed to, or the guy is almost like a provocateur.
The second point that I wanted to raise at this juncture is this whole idea of conversation. You know, these pieces, the best pieces, not only visually, but also in the oral sense, you know, our main task here is to deliver information, isn't it? I mean, we want to inform people. We want to converse with people. We want to talk with people. We want to contribute to this international dialogue that we call journalism, okay? Or communication, whatever. But the best way to do this is not by loading up like a big dump truck, a bunch of information, and backing up to somebody's front yard and going woo and dumping the stuff on their front yard, because nobody can absorb that information that quickly and that easily. So the best scripts, the best pieces, the best videos are actually, they're conversations with your audience. They're not just information that you put together and deliver it to them, because people can't absorb information like that. People absorb information when it's packaged in stories. We'll talk about dramatic arcs later and how we wrap information around the spine of these stories here. You know, around these dramatic arcs that are our characters. You know, we talk about Chain Gang, how it relates to Robbie Satterfield and Michael Martinier. We don't just give you facts and data about Chain Gang. And we really are talking about a separate language. It's a language distinct and different from the spoken language. It's a language different from our written language. It has a different alphabet. It has a different level of impact. And this section of the manual is all about defining that language, because we're going to be using, you know, we're going to be discussing this language, and it's important that we're all kind of like on the same page. So we've talked about how this language looks like on the screen, but one of the most important things that you can learn during this workshop is how to deconstruct visual stories, how to take them apart when you're seeing them, which will give you a sense of what you have to shoot, what you have to document, what you have to video while you're out there, so that when you get back to, when you get into the post-production phase, you can reconstruct what you've deconstructed in the field and what you've shot in the field. So we start with deconstructing, and then we end up with reconstructing, okay? But to do that, we have to understand, we've got to have an understanding of this visual language, which is laid out in the manual. So let's talk about what we've seen what this product, what this methodology looks like in its finished stage. What is it, you know, how do we take that apart and look at that one component of a time? So let's do exactly that, okay? If you have any questions, stop me, but I'm gonna move pretty quickly from here until 12-ish, so you guys can get out into the field. An extra close-up. These are, you know, our language has 26 letters in its alphabet. This one, the visual language has about half of that number of components, if you will. And the first one is an extra close-up. Tell me what an extra close-up looks like according to the manual. What does an extra close-up look like?
Shot of an eyeball or...
An extra close-up, I call it, it looks like this, okay?
Wow.
It looks like that. That's what an extra close-up is. And again, we're talking about the ABCs of this language. It's important that we all know what we're discussing when we talk about these ABCs, because you guys are going to be using these ABCs to build your own stories, okay? So that's what a close-up is, an extra close-up rather. It's basically a tight shot on the eyes. A close-up is a very different animal, and a close-up, well, you tell me what it looks like. Chad, will you come here, please? Let me borrow you.
Yep.
And you can select anybody you want to. You tell me what a close-up looks like as opposed to an extra close-up. You're welcome to focus in on me if you like.
Okay. I don't even know how to use this.
Okay.
I really don't.
Well, you're starting out good.
Okay.
That thing where your fingers are,
yeah,
these two fingers are, that's the zoom.
I'll look in here. Okay.
Yeah, you can zoom. Uh-huh. Okay, that's
it.
So tell me what a close-up is, or show me.
Okay.
Okay. Let's look at Chad for a second. Look at when you guys are out in the field, if you see someone holding a camera like this, and I'm not saying you were, thanks.
Okay.
When you see someone holding a camera like this, how does this look? Look pretty good.
Stable.
When you look at it, especially when it's like this. Is that okay? Can you see that behind the screen? Is that okay? Look at me, what I'm doing. I can hold this pretty steady for a couple minutes because I'm kind of used to it. But if it goes on for a while, what happens? I'm moving all around the place.
Yeah.
So again, learn some of the things, or at least make space for some of the things that I'm trying to teach you today, so you don't have to unlearn bad things 6 months from now and then somehow learn the good things. So it's very uncomfortable, but everybody's seen boxers, you know, in the rings and how they stand and so forth. You know, one toe is pointed toward the opponent, the other toe is pointed outward like that, knees are kind of bent, you know what I mean? Here's the key now, right? If you point your hip toward your subject and you turn kind of like this, all right, and you rest your elbow on your hip, and this rests on your left hand here, you'll be able to hold this thing still for long periods of time without the camera. Moving. See that? Because I'm not holding the camera up. I'm not exerting any pressure. All the weight of this camera I'm transferring it through the palm of my hand, and I have to hold this camera appropriately. I have to hold it properly, because if I hold it properly, then I've got this hand, and these fingers that I can use to control the focus ring, that I could use to control the focal length of the lens, that I could use to hit all these buttons here. If I'm holding the camera like this, you know, I can't do that, right? So the key is, you know, the point, your one toe toward the, your subject, keep your hip pointed toward that subject. Let this rest on the palm of your hand and let your left elbow sit inside of, sit on your hip. Therefore, you're not carrying any weight here. And you can stand here all day long and do pretty tight shots. The longer you're zoomed out there, the harder it is to hold this thing still. When I'm opened up like this, like a wide shot, it's fairly easy to hold it still, right? It's as if you're standing very, very close to your canvas and painting on that canvas very close. If you have to tie your brush on the end of a long pole to paint that canvas, it's really hard to keep it still. Does that make sense? Okay? So learn these small habits will take you a long way, man, when you're in the field. You know, especially if you're shooting a long interview with somebody or maybe a sporting event that's far away, you know, learn how to hold this thing the proper way. Okay? Okay, so we know what an extra close-up is. A close-up is you can take off the top of someone's hair. You know, like I'll do with Chad. I can take off the top of his hair, but I don't want to take off his chin for a couple of reasons. What's the first reason? Don't want to take off his chin, why?
If he talks, then you're losing that, are you losing part of that?
You, if you lose his chin, then you know, people, it's really annoying when you can't see people's mouths when they're talking. But also, if we want to put text below to identify, you know, I have to have space to do that. Otherwise, I'm putting lettering on top of his mouth. That's really annoying. So we went from extra close-up to close-up. What's a medium shot look like? And?
Maybe.
Kalpana? To here? Is that what it looks like?
You stay here a little bit longer.
Maybe the chest. Chest to waist.
Here's what it looks like. Here's what a medium shot looks like. Just remember, head to waist. Okay? You want to see the person's belt. I want to see the person's belt. That's what a medium shot look like. It's not, you know, a correspondent. It's not a person on you know, like the anchor on television. It's you. And again, you can take off the top of his or her hair, but you got to have that belt. Okay, that's a medium shot. Right? What's a wide shot look like? And by the way, when I'm out in the field, and I encourage you guys, when you're out in the field shooting, don't use this screen. Okay, for a number of reasons. Number one, it's difficult to tell, you know, what the lighting on these things looks like. It's difficult to tell if the camera is focusing on your subject, if it's focusing on Bruce, or if it's focusing on the background. Because these cameras are really smart, but sometimes they're so smart, they outsmart themselves. What these cameras do is they focus on light, and they focus on the space that you devote to the frame. So right now, the camera thinks, actually, this is doing a pretty good job, but the camera can get fooled into thinking that stuff in the background is important because it's so bright and I'm allotting a lot of space to it. So it's going to focus on and it's going to expose for the stuff in the background. And the people in the front are going to be what? They're going to be shadows, right? I don't want that. You have a hard time seeing it, especially when this has to compete with the light outside. You don't notice that the background your subject is out of focus. You don't notice what the camera is doing. You get a much clearer sense of what's in focus and what's not. If I immediately, when I look through this now, I go, holy cow, you know, Steiner and Anna are shadows, and this camera's looking at, focusing on, and exposing for, you know, the steps in the background. So I know I have to do something. I've got to change something here, maybe just about like that, to compensate for that. Like that, okay?
What are you changing to make it?
I'm just changing the composition. I'm taking out.
You're not changing anything on the camera.
No, nothing. I'm moving from here. I'm telling the camera, no, I'm saying, look, you know, I want this guy here and that woman back there. I want you to focus on and expose for them. Not the guy with the camera. Okay, I'm not gonna change anything here, but if I move over here and I include more light there, the camera thinks, oh, it must be that stuff in the background that he thinks is important. Mm-hmm. So it focuses on and exposes for that. But no, I don't want that stuff. So I have to sacrifice something. I have to move. I have to figure out how I tell the camera, this is what I want.
Mm-hmm. Are most of them center-weighted?
I believe most of them are center-weighted.
You know, yeah. They're taking the whole scene.
Yeah. So be careful. Try not be, you know, there's another reason why you don't use these screens, or why I use them as little as possible. Why? Think about it. Why do I use this thing as little as possible?
Because it confuses you. It doesn't show you the light accurately, right?
That's the first reason, but what else? What else?
You lose some of the stability of the camera.
Well, what happens is, there's three reasons. When I hold this up like this, which I see a lot of particularly young people doing, I'm erecting this as a wall, as a barrier between me and my subjects. And the whole idea is not to construct walls between me and my subjects. The whole idea is to connect with my subjects. This is what I want.
It pulls you out of that boxer thing too.
Yeah.
The boxer stand.
Yeah, exactly. I want this. This is called connection. This is connection. This is called a barrier. But there's another really, really practical reason. And that is that this thing here, if the camera has to light this thing up, what does it do?
Battery
power is being sucked up by this. So, you know, if you have limited batteries, you know, if you're going to spend extended time in the field, you got to close this thing and you have to shoot with this. I can maintain a conversation with you. I can look at you. And if I learn how to do this, I can talk with you while maintaining eye contact with you while I'm shooting you. And you're looking at me, not at the camera. I want you to look at me. I don't want you to be distracted by this camera, right? Because if you're looking at me, you're looking at the audience that I'm trying to communicate with, okay? So we've got extra close-up, we have a close-up, we have a medium shot. What's a wide shot look like according to the manual? What's a wide shot? Sorry?
Head to foot.
It's head to foot. What's an extra wide shot look like? I don't have an extra wide lens that I would screw onto this, but you can imagine it's, you know, it's everything that I can get into the room here. And extra wide shots and wide shots are used for something specific. They have a special name if we use them in a certain way. What do we call them?
A scene setter.
Sorry?
Like a scene setter.
It's a scene setter. We call them master shots.
Establishing?
We call them establishing shots, don't we? Why? Because whenever we go around, after we deconstruct this place visually, after we document everything that's happening, after we deal and we follow the characters, after I find out who is the Michael Martineer and who is the Robbie Satterfield in this thing, after I find out who my characters are, I do sequences. We're going to talk about that next. I do master shots from this corner, from that corner, from that corner to that corner, so that I see where all of these pieces that make up this scene fall into. Does that make sense? Okay, so we've got, what's next? We've got extra close-ups, we have close-ups, medium shots, wide shots, extra wide shots. What's next in the manual? What does it say?
Tracking shot.
Tracking? What is a tracking shot?
Follow the person.
If Chad were shooting a documentary, let's use the analogy of this workshop, okay? If, you know, one of you decided, and you can do that if you want, if one of you decided that you're going to do a documentary about this workshop, you would probably identify me as one of the characters that you want to feature in the documentary, right? Because the whole dynamic here is about the relationship between me and you, between the students and the professor. So you'd probably, and I'm kind of a high energy kind of wound pretty tight kind of guy, and I move around a lot, right? So if I'm doing that and Chad's shooting this piece, if he's doing a segment or rather a sequence about me, he probably wants to do a tracking shot when I walk back and forth, and certainly follow my feet when I'm walking back and forth like that, and occasionally let me walk out of frame, but he wants to track me back and forth. Tracking shot is different from a pan shot. What's a pan shot? Go ahead.
You pan the camera across the scene. It's not necessarily following somebody, but it's getting the context.
A couple of pans. You know, pan typically refers to you're not moving, and you just pan across. I think I mentioned before when I did a couple of pieces in the Sahara Desert, and man, I would put the camera on a tripod and I would just move across the Sahara, and it was a really nice slow pan when I want people to appreciate, you know, what the Sahara Desert looks like, okay? And I would just do like that. That's a pan. There's another thing. It's not quite a pan. It's something that moves diagonally, and it moves kind of, it'll move maybe like this, and it'll go that way. Is that a pan as well? It's a blend of a pan, a kind of a pan, as a cousin of the pan. What do we call this? It could be diagonal. Maybe it's straight vertical. It could be like this. I can go like that. What do I call this?
Oh, that's cool.
It could be a tilt, huh? So we got a pan, we have a tilt. Just remember that these movements like this, and I don't want you to do this stuff today, but pans and tilts, you know what these are? These are like stitches, like in the shirt here. And they connect one piece of visual information to another piece of visual information. In this case, we're talking about cloth, right? But in our language, we're talking about pieces of visual information. So if by the end of this workshop, you guys should be able to almost paint with these cameras. That's how, you know, how wonderful they are, because they're mobile. You can move with them. You can use your own body language to talk with these people, to communicate with people through these cameras. What's after pans and tilts? Sorry?
A zoom?
Zooms. There are two kinds of zooms, okay? And this is the first kind that Sony gave us in this case. And it goes like this, okay? It goes like that. Zoom out, rather zoom out, and zoom in. And there's a second pan, a second zoom, and what is that?
Push.
Sorry?
A push.
Well, the second zoom is like this. Zoom in, and zoom out. So one is with this thing here, with our fingers. The other one was with our feet. I don't want you to do this today. What I want you guys to do is I want you to make still pictures. I want you to make still pictures. I want you to compose your picture first, and then I want you to press this button, which is the record button. I don't want you to record, rather to compose, while you're recording, because this is an incredible waste of time, and it's an incredible waste of tape or card space or whatever you're using. This is a waste, okay? Stop recording. Figure out what you want to shoot. I want to shoot this. I got that. Then I want to shoot this. Oops. So I compose, and I'll hit the record button. Then I'll stop.
Are these like 8-second little clips? I mean, how long or what's
good
that?
Good question. Good question. You're jumping ahead, but that's great. Okay. It's fine. Minimum 20 seconds. Mm. You shoot these things for a minimum of 20 seconds. Why a minimum of 20 seconds? Why?
For editing.
Sorry?
For editing.
Well, watch what happens here. If I'm going to shoot Chad writing, go ahead, Chad, write for a while. 1001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. At some point, he's going to stop writing. 11, 12, 13, 14, and then he's going to start writing again. 17, 18, 19, 20. So he stopped writing at about second number what? It was like 16 seconds in. So you guys we saw Chain Gang, and you said, somebody here commented that the thing really moves,
yeah.
Right? And I'm not moving the camera around a lot. I'm moving around a little bit, but it moves. Why? Because I shoot everything a minimum of 20 seconds long, each clip. Is a minimum of 20 seconds, and somewhere in that clip, inevitably, something's gonna happen that I can use as a cutting point. In this case, Chad stops writing at second 16, so if I'm doing a sequence on him, I'll probably take from second 14, 15, and then at 16, he pulls his hand away, and then at 17, his hand is gone. So I'm gonna use those 4 seconds of that 20-second clip, and I'm gonna use that, and as soon as he pulls his hand away, that is a signal, a visual signal, that I can go to another clip. Mm. So I'm not moving the camera, but things move inside my clips. Things move inside my video snapshots. And that's what gives motion to these things. We'll talk about this 1,000 times. And I'm going to ask you 1,000 times, what do we see here? And, you know, on one level, we see whatever it is we're shooting, okay? We see this. I got this. But what I want you guys to see is not only what we see on this screen. I want you to see what's happening behind the screen. Because behind the screen, there's an architect's drawing. In our case, it's not an architect, but a video journalist's drawing, or a cameraman's drawing, or a video journalist's drawing. There's a design back here. It's like an architect's drawing that has dramatic arcs, and it has cutting points, and it has all the rest of it. And your task, in part, during this workshop, is to learn to see behind the screen at the structure. It's like the difference between seeing a building there, a 10-story building, going, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's 10 stories high. You understand that. But if you can peel off the bricks on the front of the building and see what's behind those bricks, oh, now I can see the steel beams. I see where the electric system runs. I can see the plumbing of the building. That's what I want you to be able to see. Not just to identify it's a 10-story building because I can count the windows on the outside. I want you to see behind the screen and learn to build these things from behind, because that's the way you're going to reconstruct your own stuff when we get back in the post-production phase. Okay? What's next on the list of shots, please?
Point of view.
The point of view. What is the point of view?
It's what you're looking at.
Your subject.
Your subject or your...
Okay. Chad, can I borrow you? May I borrow you again, please? And we lost the connection here because this cable... There you go. All right. So if Chad is doing, again, a documentary about this workshop, okay? If he's doing a documentary about this workshop, he's probably already shot a lot of stuff of me standing in front of here. He knows that I'm walking in and out of this thing as I'm going to do over the next 4 days, right? So he shoots me, you know, we just got out of the car. He's with me on the outside. And he says, Bill, hold on a second. I'm going to run inside and count to five on the outside. We can do this. Count to five and then come through the door. Okay? So I'm outside. I count to five and I count through the door. Chad's shooting me. You know, he said, you're right there.
Okay.
He shoots me and I come in and I say, hey, class, we're back from lunch now. Okay? All right, so he got me. You just documented me coming back into this thing, into the room from the outside. Now, if you're smart, what you'll do is later, you'll go back and you'll do what I see, what my point of view is. Let me know if this thing disappears again. What my point of view is, when I start out here, you'll just walk, repeat what I did from when I opened the door here, and I close the door, and I come in, and I see oh, hi guys, I'm back from lunch, and so we can start again. So it's my point of view when I'm coming in from outside. He's following me, I'm his subject, but he shoots what I'm seeing as I come in. So he can cut between me coming from the outside into the house and what I see when I actually get into the house. It's my point of view. Okay? So what's next on the list? Point of view, what else?
Over the shoulder.
Over the shoulder. What does that look like? Let me show you real quick. Over the shoulder means this. This is what an over the shoulder is, okay? I know it's Chad. I can see what he's doing. I already shot 20 seconds of him writing something, okay? And now I'm gonna do this because it's an interesting shot, okay? Again, you guys saw Chain Gang, and we saw that one of the things that kept Chain Gang moving were the compelling images that made Chain Gang, that's what made the thing run, okay? Now, if he's really smart, what he's going to do, and I'm going to ask Bruce to do this for us, if he'll put the, just let the camera sit for a while. Not only do we want to see what Chad is writing, but we want to connect, let's assume that we're going to make Chad the one of the characters in the film, okay, in this documentary about this workshop. Is everybody following me? Okay, so I'm one of the characters in the film. I have to be, because the workshop is primarily about my relationship with you. Stay there, Bruce, please. Okay, we chose Chad to be one of our characters in the film. We're gonna do a sequence, and I'm gonna show you how to do that right now. We're gonna do a sequence on Chad. You're gonna sit, Chad.
Okay.
You're gonna be writing.
Okay.
So Bruce is gonna do an over-the-shoulder shot of Chad while he's writing, okay, just like we did. And also, because Bruce needs to marry characters in the film together, he's not only gonna do an over-the-shoulder shot of Chad writing, but if he's really smart, if he really understands the language, he'll probably connect Chad with me, with the instructor. Because again, that's what part of the dynamic is about. So he'll do an over-the-shoulder shot of Chad. We'll see Chad's shoulder and we'll see me at the same time. You probably want to come down. That's it, come down. Like, you might have to choose his other side, actually, Bruce. Can you make that happen?
Yes.
Kind of like that, uh-huh. Yeah, can you bring the camera down? That's it. You want to do that and get more of his shoulder in. No, there, kind of like there.
Wow.
That's what you want. That's what he wants. So he's got two of his characters in the film now.
Mm.
We already know that it was Chad writing. And you've got, you know, the central character in the film married visually together, connected with another character in the film. Okay? That's what, you know, the over-shoulder looks like. Thanks, Bruce. Anything else? What's next on the list?
That's it.
That's all she wrote? Okay.